Welcome to First Fiction, the podcast dedicated to showcasing notable new fiction published on Verso.inc. Verso.inc is a new online community for discovering and sharing great fiction. Our mission is to help discerning readers discover the best new fiction and assist emerging authors in growing their audiences. First Fiction features selected works distinguished as noteworthy by Verso.inc moderators. Keep listening, and you might discover something you love. Hello, and welcome to First Fiction. This is your host, Karen Hahn, and I am excited to share a short piece with you today to get you in an apocalyptic mood. The Follower by M.K. Martin is a poignant tale of love and loyalty in the midst of a harsh fight for survival. I really enjoyed my visit with M.K. about The Follower and some of her other work. And I think you'll really enjoy hearing about her unique and varied life experience. She's certainly much more adventurous at heart than I am. If you want to hear that interview, keep listening after the story. In the meantime, here's The Follower by M.K. Martin, narrated by Carly Schofield.
I watch her sleep, her short bristle of hair twisted into sweaty knots. I can't help her, and it's killing me. I lay down next to her, the heat baking off her in waves. I sigh, and the dust puffs out. A few small, dry leaves flap at me as if annoyed by the disturbance. Can't you see we're dying here? Above us, the night sky wheels slowly, and we lay at the center of the universe. The stars are as careless of our existence as we are of theirs. They say some of the stars went out thousands or millions of years ago, but their light still reaches us. That alone should be enough to make one despair. How little the universe cares for the death of the great and mighty stars. How much less will it care for one tiny planet or one little life on that planet? One little thing, sick, starving, and alone. Or so she thinks. I watch over her. I know she doesn't want me around. She threw rocks at me. I can't even take care of myself. What am I supposed to do with you? Go away! So I went, but I came back. I followed her along the brown stream with its plague of dying fish. I followed her through the forest where the squirrel skulls stared at us, nothing but empty hate in their tiny heads. I followed her past the little trailer park where colored streamers hung from a flagpole. Now, when it was too late, now no one cared what color their flag was. I close my eyes and listen to the rattly sound of her breath. I sleep, knowing if that noise stops, I'll wake. It's not the lack of breathing that wakes me, but the scent of him. Like spoiled meat and musk, dirt, and waste. A man stands over us. How could he have snuck up on me? He looks her over and smiles. In her sleep, she looks so young and helpless. I sit up and he starts in surprise. Didn't realize the girl was spoken for, eh, Buster? The man winks at me. He squats and regards us critically. My lucky day. One to eat and one to play with. I grab the girl's wrist and try to tug her away. She struggles up. Pulls away from me. She loses her balance and the man grabs her as she falls back. She screams. The man laughs. He reaches into her coat. She cries out in pain, fumbles for the small knife at her hip, but he pins her wrist. I charge him, throwing all my weight into his shoulder. I knock him down and we all go sliding through the mushy leaves, the rot underneath a slick lubricant. I kick him in the chest and when he reaches for my throat, I latch onto his hand. I growl like a savage beast as I clench my jaws on his fingers. He tries to pull away. A mistake. He kicks me in the stomach, flipping me over, yanks his hand out of my mouth. It trails ribbons of bloody flesh like the streamers of color the flag had. They glitter in the dim light of pre-dawn. I scramble up, but my legs fail me. When he kicked me, something broke inside, and I can feel my strength leaking away. I sag back, gasping in pain. Beyond the man, she is on her feet, her knife clutched in her hand. Her eyes are wide, nostrils flared. The man, satisfied I'm no threat, turns back to her. Take it easy, sweet thing, and I won't have to hurt you too much, he says. His voice is gentle and soothing. I want to believe him, but she doesn't. Her whole body is rigid, radiating fear and hate. He takes a step toward her and she backs away. Behind her, the ground slopes up, and even on flat ground, as sick as she is, she couldn't outrun him. It's up to me. I hear him fumble at the front of his worn pants. I gather my legs under me. Eyes closed against the pain, I stand. When I breathe, I sound worse than she did. I can't smell him for the scent of my own blood in my nose. She looks around for an escape. The moment her eyes leave him, the man lunges, but so do I. I leap, and my force combined with his forward momentum drive us to the ground. He's stunned, but won't be for long. I can't hold him, I'm too small. I look at her and our eyes lock. She understands. She raises the knife and plunges it down. It makes a soft, popping sound. The man gurgles. I feel him spasm, life flowing out of him. She stands over us, and all I can think is, I'm glad she's safe. She falls to her knees, her hands shaking from fever and fatigue. Why did you come back, you stupid, stupid? She sniffs, swipes her sleeve across her nose. A rattle rolls up in my chest and catches in my throat. I moan in pain. She gathers me into her arms, her tears hot against me. I know everything inside me is breaking down, but I don't care. She's safe. I just wanted her to be safe. I twist my head to look at her one final time as the darkness rolls in. I love you, you stupid dog.
Joining me today on First Fiction is M.K. Martin. She has a really interesting background. She's a motorcycle riding linguistics nerd, a former Army interrogator with a degree in psychology, who uses her unique knowledge and skill set to create smart, gritty stories that give readers a glimpse into the darker corners of the human mind. Certainly, we have seen that play out in The Follower. She's also author of Survivor's Club, an adult medical thriller, and is currently getting her master's in writing and publishing. So welcome, MK.
Thank you, Karen. It's so great to be here.
Well, I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to join me and talk about these things. So I'd like to hear a little bit more about your background. How does an Army interrogator become a writer? What is the journey there?
Oh, well, I think it's more of a journey of how does a writer become an Army interrogator? And it all begins, as all of these good stories do, on a small farm in the middle of nowhere. I feel like it's true. So I grew up in rural Minnesota. And when I was in high school, I was a foreign exchange student, and I went to Paraguay and I lived there for a year. And I think everyone should be an exchange student because it is a phenomenal experience. And it also will get that pesky college requirement of learning a foreign language out of the way. So just, you know, think about it. And then when I got back, I realized, well, you know, nuts. I have like another year to live in this tiny little rural town in the middle of nowhere. And I thought, you know what would be adventurous and amazing as I could sign up to be in the Army. Like they have adventures. So I joined the National Guard. And kind of a few years into that, I was in college and September 11th happened. And I thought, well, you know, National Guard is a good way to go, but I think I'll switch over from National Guard to active duty. And so I went down on September 12th and switched over. Yeah, my mom was thrilled. I called her up from the Army recruiting station and I was like, Mom, guess where I am? And she was like, in a bunker. And I was like, no, I'm joining the Army. So...
The opposite.
Yes. Yes. I may not have some, you know, good instincts when it comes to danger. And so, one of the things that they did in the Army, you know, when I was going through the signup process is they have, you know, all of these different jobs. And at the time, if you signed up to be an interrogator, they would teach you another foreign language. And I really loved languages and I was like, okay, well, that sounds like something that I could do. And kind of the way they had described it to me is they said, well, you just kind of mess with people's minds and learn a foreign language and we'll pay you for it. And I was like, well, I do that anyways for free. So, yeah.
So do you find then that the experiences you have, I mean, that sounds like such a unique experience and skill set. How does that then infuse your writing?
Well, one of the things I think that makes people good writers is that they're very observant. You know, they're always kind of just poking around, eavesdropping, watching everybody else. And I think this is the same sort of skill set that makes for a good interrogator, because you want to be a very observant person. So you can pick up on cues when the person that you're interrogating is lying or telling the truth, or maybe kind of fudging it a little bit, or if you can find pressure points, not literal pressure points, because that would be wrong, and we don't do that.
Good to know.
Yes. Yeah, there have been so many scandals. I feel like I always have to start out any conversation about my former history by saying, first thing you should know, I've never committed a war crime. So
top of the resume right there.
Yes. Am not a war criminal. You can hire me.
That's awesome. So now you also have a degree in psychology. So, you know, is this something also then that you have always been interested in? Did that kind of come out of your military service or in conjunction there?
It did. So after I got done being a contractor overseas, then I worked as a Department of Defense instructor for a while. And while I was doing that, I got my psychology degree on the side, just because psychology degree is just generally useful, I think, in almost every walk of life. Mm-hmm. And it was particularly useful in the work that I was doing at the time. And then a couple years later, I realized, and I feel kind of silly. Again, it's one of those, like, you look back at your younger self and you're like, what was wrong with you? Like, why didn't you people have the internet back then? But I realized there was a thing called linguistics. And I was like, wait a minute. I love languages. I love learning languages. And this is a thing that you can study and you can get a degree in. So I used most of the rest of my GI Bill to go and get another degree in linguistics.
Oh, nice.
Which my poor husband is constantly reminding me that our child is not my personal linguistics experiment. And I'm like, well, they kind of are, though, really.
In a way, though.
But just in a really benign, like an observing kind of way.
There you go. So how many languages do you speak?
So right now I speak English and Spanish and a little bit of Russian, only that's quite rusty. And my sister, who followed in my footsteps, I'm proud to say, and was also a foreign exchange student, went to France. So I'm trying to learn French so that I can talk to her. And also because I live in Vermont, so you kind of have to speak French anyways.
And so did you, was it the Russian then that you used more, or what did you use more in your army service?
Yeah, so I spoke Russian and they sent me to Afghanistan, which I will say did not endear me with the locals. Mm. They are still not very fond of Russians. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, hey, I'm an American, but I also speak Russian.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so mostly I kept that to myself.
Interesting. So your novel then, Survivors Club, you said is a medical thriller. So what is the premise behind that?
So the premise of the book is that there is a virus that mutates people. It basically makes them very aggressive. It's very infectious, and it will mutate them into kind of these monstrous creatures. And it was caused by this company that's trying to create a panfluenza vaccine. So they're trying to get rid of the flu. Mm-hmm. And they find a virus that they think will be sort of the perfect, you know, use of like a retrovirus that they can go in and they can give it to people and make them immune to the flu. And of course, you know, things go terribly awry, as they always do.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my writer friends was asking me, is now like the best time or the worst time to be marketing this kind of book? And I'm
right?
Like, I don't know. Like, it's either a how-to guide for our current moment, or people are so tired of pandemics that they're like, I just don't want to read anymore about a pandemic. So yeah.
Yeah. I was wondering about that. When did you publish that?
So I published it in, April. So the first book is out April 2017.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So do you feel like there, as we've lived through this year of 2020 and the pandemic, do you think of things in the book that you think, yeah, I totally got that right? Or are there things that are like, I never would have guessed that this is how this would go down?
Oh, no. So I did. So there's some of the things I'm a little bit worried about, like maybe I'm Nostradamus coming in or something like that. So I had this whole section in the book where it's kind of like a reoccurring joke in the book where the characters are always looking for toilet paper.
No kidding.
Yeah. So I'm now I'm kind of afraid to finish the book. I'm like, I better just give this like a super happy ending. Otherwise I'm
right. Everybody lives.
Everybody, all the children are able to go back to school and it's fine. It's all completely right. Fine.
Oh, that's hilarious because I think for most of us, you know, things like the lack of toilet paper took us all by surprise. That was not how we expected, you know, the apocalypse to go down.
Yeah. So. I think most people are kind of, you know, you're like nobody in Mad Max is ever looking for toilet paper. Like that's not a thing that comes right. up.
All right. So speaking of the apocalypse, then let's talk about The Follower then. What were your thoughts behind that? Where'd you get the idea? And particularly with the viewpoint?
So while I was writing Survivors Club and the second book, which tentatively right now is called Ashfall, I had put together I put together playlists. And I put together kind of a writing playlist for just mood music and different songs that I think speak to whatever piece that I'm working on. And so I had this playlist that I had been listening to kind of over and over and over. And I had just started jotting down, like as different songs came on, I had started jotting down, you know, thoughts of, you know, what is the mood of the song? What are some of the imagery that comes to me? What am I thinking about? And then I had started writing songs or started writing stories, incorporating the elements of the song, like kind of writing for the soundtrack. And so The Follower is one of those stories that came out of a song from a playlist for a different book.
That is really cool. So did you know and all along, I mean, was that, yes, this is going to be from the perspective of the dog?
So I didn't initially. I am not. So if you've ever done NaNoWriMo, National Novel Writing Month, you know they tend to divide people into the two camps of plotter and pantser.
Sure.
And I'm definitely a write by the seat of my pants. So I just kind of started writing this story about somebody that was sort of following this person and trying to make sure that they were safe. And then as the story went through, I was like, well, I don't know if I want it to be the character that you would, you know, I don't want it to be the character that might be expected. And so then at the very, then I think probably a good halfway through, I knew who that character was, the viewpoint character. And then, so I went back and I tweaked the beginning to just make it a little bit more into that character's viewpoint. But I think the beginning is a little, it's like, I can tell, I don't know, maybe a very observant reader could tell also that the beginning paragraph is maybe a little different from the rest of it. But I liked it so much, I was like, nah, I'm just going to keep it.
Yeah, I think it's great. And I think it's, you know, there's enough in there that as I read it, for the first time, I felt like it was just kind of being revealed a little at a time, you know, and you have enough details in there where if you're paying attention, that, you know, that it, you are true to that character, right? Everything from the perspective, even though you don't come right out and say it until the very end. I didn't feel like it was like a bait and switch, you know, but rather just having those clues and that mood so that it felt right once I knew what it was. But it was a natural progression. So I thought you did that really well.
Oh, good. I'm so pleased that that's your experience of reading it, because that's exactly what I was hoping for. Like you said, I didn't want it to be sort of a gotcha, like, ha ha, you never saw this coming. Personally, I hate stories like that. And I feel like it's kind of lazy writing. Like, you know, you're just like, you're tricking the reader. Like, I always want my stories to feel like me as the author, I'm on the reader's side. Like I'm on your side. I want you to enjoy the story.
So how do you imagine then this world? I mean, it has these really strong apocalyptic feelings to it. But again, we're in the perspective of a dog. So we're not, you know, it's not worrying about telling us all the backstory of how we got to this point. So how do you envision it? Or do you just, are you like, you know what, that's up to the reader to add that meaning?
Well, I tried not to, so I really tried to limit the focus to, what would a dog notice, but how could I also give the reader kind of clues and cues so that a human could, you know, my human reader, because I'm assuming very few dogs are literate. There's probably a couple out there that are incredibly smart, but I haven't met them yet. So I wanted to make sure, how do I cue my readers that, you know, this is what has happened. This is the world that these characters are in without explaining it in a way that the viewpoint character doesn't understand because they can't. And so I think there was some of the descriptions and the details that I chose to focus on talking about, you know, here's how things look. Here's the things that I see as I pass by them. And to make sure that those things were very well described, but then not commented on further. So a lot of times if I'm writing in first person, you can kind of have that inner monologue where you can describe something. And then the character also says, well, you know, I saw this tattered flag and here's what I think about it. And they can explain it a little bit more to the reader, but I didn't want to do too much explaining with that character. And also it's a short story, so you don't want to, you know, belabor it too much. But the thing that my fun little piece was, I had been watching, cause I have a small child, so I watch a lot of Disney and Pixar and things like that. And I'd been watching the movie Up, and the dogs are constantly obsessed with squirrels. And so I got a squirrel joke in there.
Yes. Now, is this at all part of any sort of a collection? Do you plan on doing anything more with this story or this world? Or
I've actually got a collection of some of the other short stories.
Oh, nice.
That had come out of that. So that playlist, my post-apocalyptic playlist. And so I have other flash fiction story pieces that I'm just had given myself the goal of, I want to write like 12 of these and just keep them pretty short, keep them about the length that, like, the idea is that you could kind of read most of the story while the song that it's based on is playing. And it doesn't necessarily line up like beat for beat, but, you know, it gives you an idea of the mood.
That's super cool. So is that something that you have shared that readers could find?
Yes. So if readers go to my website, which is mkmartinwriter.com, and check out my blog, they all fall under Tales of the Apocalypse. And
nice.
Yeah. And it's set in what I consider is the world of the Survivors Club. And it's just, but it's nothing to do with the main characters or their storyline. It's just like, what else is happening in that world? Like, if you weren't with those characters, if you just picked up and went 500 miles east of them or something like that, what would be going on?
Sure. Awesome. Now, do you have, are you active on social media? Can readers and listeners follow you there?
They can. I have, so at Twitter at MK Martin Writer, I've just tried to be really consistent about that. And also Facebook, I have an author page, which is MK Martin Writer.
Perfect. Oh, and so where can readers find Survivors Club?
I will say the best thing to do, because I'm a great fan of trying to buy local when you can, or trying to buy from smaller businesses if possible. So the best thing to do is you could go to the publisher's website, which is Not a Pipe, like the pipe that you kind of smoke, notapipe.com, and you can order it directly from the publisher. You can get it on Amazon. You can get it through Powell's, which is, you know, I miss mm-hmm. Powell's. I'm out here on the East Coast and we don't have it, but you West Coast folks know it.
Well, thank you so much for taking time to talk about your work. It's been delightful to visit with you today and hear all about your experiences and the fun projects that you're working on.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. And I really hope that things stay nice and quiet and not on fire out there.
Yeah. And listeners, if you enjoyed The Follower, then be sure and get on to verso.inc. You can sign up for free and vote for MK's The Follower and also discover some of our other authors and the new work coming out there. Thank you for listening to this episode of First Fiction. If you'd like to hear more great fiction from the best emerging authors, be sure to subscribe. To learn more about this podcast and the authors and stories we promote, visit verso.inc. That's verso.inc.